It's time for another episode of It's Almost an Hour with Henrik Stenson. Because Henrik, you just won't give me an hour. How are you doing? Greetings from Houston.
Yes, we're doing pretty good. We're in sunny Houston. Weather's a little cooler. And we're just getting ready to start practicing and start preparing for this week. We certainly need to get something going here. Game is not really in the place we want to. And we also had some other stumbles and challenges. So, we've got some work to do.
All right. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your foot. Can you give everybody an update on your health?
Yeah, so I played pickleball, one of America's favorite sports, a couple of weeks ago. And I used to play badminton when I was a junior. So whenever I get the chance to smash and jump up and smash, I normally take it. And I landed with all my weight on my right heel and kind of bruised that up a little bit. And it was bothering me for about 4 or 5 days. But then I didn't, think too much about it. And with us being at home and not really walking the golf course, it wasn't until I got to Bermuda and started walking on the turf and walking for longer periods of time that it started bothering me again. So it's certainly a little bit something there. I got another few days rest and I hope that it's not going to be bothering me too much. I saw my physio, I saw my doctor, and apparently I just have to suck it up. If it hurts, we just have to try and stay strong and basically walk through the pain.
All right. Well, we all wish you the best on that. And, Augusta, certainly not the easiest golf course to walk. So we need you to make sure you're feeling in tip-top shape before you head to Augusta in a week's time.
Yeah, Augusta is certainly one of the harder walks. That's normally the place where my knee starts giving me a little bit of grief. It's a very hilly and also you walk quite a lot of side hills. So, but it's nothing we haven't done before. And like I said, I hope we should be able to perform, at Augusta and this week here in Houston without too much problem on the physical side. But who knows? We're getting to that age where some of the niggles start showing up every now and again.
Yeah, trust me, I'm about a year ahead of you, and let me just tell you, the last year it gets a little bit dicier. All right, let's get into Houston a little bit.
Thanks. That's comforting to hear. I appreciate it.
Well, but you're an elite world class athlete, unlike myself, so I'm sure you'll just breeze right through it. What happens a week before a major in terms of why do you like playing? Because there's two strategies, right? You either play or you stay home and work on your game. Why do you prefer playing this week?
I think it just mentally puts you in more the game mode and you kind of, you're out there hitting shots, playing tournament play. So for me, it's certainly a better way to get my mindset right, to be playing the week before. I think most of the times when I've done good results in majors, I've played the week before. So I think for me, it really should be a no-brainer. On that end, the decision, you come up to these conclusions over time, and then scheduling wise and where tournaments are. And like, for instance, US Open, we had Napa the week before and it's on the other side of the country. And yeah, sometimes it's not maybe the most convenient to get it to work, but I didn't do a good result at the US Open and I didn't play the week before. But on the other end, I played in Memphis the week before PGA, didn't do a good result there either. So it's, no strategy is waterproof in that sense. And you can just go with what you think is going to be the best for you. And on my end, it's certainly to play the week before a major.
And this week, particularly in the practice rounds or on your range sessions, are you turning any of your focus to, let me work a little bit on a shot I need to play next week at Augusta? Or are you just locked in on this event and just dialed into what's the task in front of you?
Well, given where I'm at with my game, I got my coach here this week, Pete Cowan, and I mean, I'm just not swinging the golf club the way I want to. And there's certainly going to be a bit more focus on that maybe than, I feel like I'm caught up a little bit behind the eight ball here because I'm not playing well enough. I'm not swinging well enough to hit the shots that I want to do. So I got to work on that. At the same time, you can't have these weeks turning into practice sessions either. So it's a bit of a tricky one, and I can't really give you an answer on how this outcome's going to be. We got to do the best we can with what we have, and just try and balance that kind of thin line between development and performance, and that is certainly one of the harder tightropes to walk really in this sport.
In the past, when Houston used to be the lead up to Augusta, the golf course was set up very similarly. They treated the grass the same way. We're at a new golf course for the Houston Open. The course is not very similar to Augusta National. Does that bother you at all, or is it still just about executing?
Yeah, it's going to be slightly different in that sense. When we played the Houston Open the week before Augusta, it was more about having an opportunity to play on the same surface here. I haven't been out on the course yet, but I'm sitting here in my car in the parking lot and just looking out over it. It's going to be Bermuda grass, so it's going to be totally different grass from what we're playing next week. And it's going to be more about executing your shots and trying to get into the routine of picking your targets, making your decisions, and going through all those things as well as you can. Yeah, it's going to be a different lead up, no question. But we will have a different Masters as well. So I think this year the challenges everyone's had in different ways, and out here on the course, you just got to be, try and keep your patience and deal with the circumstances the best you can and do the best you can.
Yeah, I mean, adapting seems to be the key to this year. What can you share with me as we look on the road to Augusta about your Masters week? We've seen that they have canceled the par three. There's obviously going to be, I figured this out all by myself, Henrik. There's going to be less daylight because of daylight savings time. They're in fact, one of the days, either Thursday or Friday, you'll be starting around on the 10th tee as opposed to always starting at number one. What's your week looking like, and how do those factors play into what the week is for you?
So we're saving daylight, but there's less of it.
Well, they're just, we the days are a little shorter in November than they are in April, but also with daylight savings, it gets darker sooner. So there's less daylight in November than there is in April.
Thank you so much for clarifying that. No problem. Appreciate that.
I'm here to help you.
You got to look at it from the bright side. If there's not a par three, no one can get that curse of winning the par three and then not being able to win the Masters. So That's always a positive for someone. I think on my end, I've been enough at Augusta over the years in the tournament prep to play the golf course with no people around. It's certainly a different look, and you don't get that framing on a lot of the holes. And it's just more of a wide open area, kind of in the middle of the golf course. And It will be a different feel. Playing conditions, I think, will be determined a fair bit on the weather we're going to see next week. If it's, I think the long term forecast that I saw looked pretty good weather wise, but
it does.
Otherwise, you would have felt like it could play a bit softer and a bit longer, given in the fall maybe. And like you said, we're going to then do a U draw. I had no clue really that was going to be in place, but we played a U draw the final round last year when Tiger won because of the weather, and we moved everything up. And so I started on the 10th tee already a year ago, so I'm out well in advance on that practice.
Yeah, you seem to have it. I would assume that they saw you doing it, like, well, we should just do that if we ever had to play it in November. Is it, because the course is so methodically laid out and it's such a mental exercise as well as a physical exercise, does starting at 10 almost make you feel like you're starting in the middle of the day, or like, is it affect you or not really? You just play the holes in front of you.
Yeah, I think it's one of them. When you're new on tour, you probably get more flustered of a rain delay or a thunder delay. When you're done this for as long as I've done it, and a lot of my colleagues, you just kind of take it with a slightly different attitude. And okay, they called us off the golf course. We'll go in, we'll eat some, we'll chill out. And then when they tell us it's time to go, we're ready to go. And I think it's the same there. You just play. You're gonna play 18 holes. It doesn't really matter in what particular order. So I'm all fine with starting on the 10th.
All right. Well, someone else who's had pretty amazing success as national is someone who had success caddying for you, Fanny Sunesson. And Henrik, we're going to do something new on the podcast starting this week, and we're going to hopefully have it as a recurring theme going forward. We're going to have a guest join us. So how about we have a little conversation with one of your former caddies, Fanny Sunesson. Is that okay?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, people are going to get pretty tired hearing you and me mumbling away here. So we need some new blood in this podcast, I'm sure. So looking forward to speaking to Fanny now.
Henrik, we've been talking about how we're going to change the podcast up each week, and we had a really great idea. Let's hear less from us, and let's bring other people to come in who know you really well, who you know really well, and can give us some insights into what makes you tick, what makes you break golf clubs, how you think on the golf course. And no one, in my opinion, would be better to start off as our first guest on the Almost an Hour podcast than Fanny Sunesson, longtime caddy all over the world and someone who you've known and worked with for years. So Fanny, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here. I'm looking forward to it.
No problem. All right. Before I let Henrik...
At least one of us is looking forward to you spilling the beans. All right, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's actually the name of the segment we were working on is called Spilling the Beans With. But we'll keep it nice. And look, we're all friends here. Fanny, tell me what makes Henrik one of the more unique golfers to caddy for on the PGA Tour, European Tour, all over the world?
Well, I mean, first of all, his game. I mean, he's got shots that most players don't have. I mean, he's one of the best ball strikers, and then he's got that's amazing. And then he's got this temper, and that combination makes it interesting. And he's very analytical. So I mean, he's a good challenge to work for, and he's a great guy. So I absolutely loved it.
Temper. You have a temper?
Occasionally.
All right.
I'm sure I can be a handful. I try, however, though, not to kind of let too many things get kind of together in that sense. I mean, I hope I'm not too unfair in terms of, you know, the caddies that I work with. And I can certainly be upset. I'm sure I can give them a bit of a hard time every now and again. But I still don't hope that I come across as someone that wants to blame my mistakes every day of the week on my caddy. And I know there's a few of my caddies, I think, that can do a better job at that than myself. I'd like to hope so.
I can say that it's no way you gave away the blame. I mean, you get angry more at yourself.
Yeah, so. I'd like to think so. And I mean, I'm demanding a lot out of myself on and off the golf course, and I'm pretty sure that I do the same with the people around me on my team. But that's if you want to be up there, if you want to compete at the highest level and compete with the best, everyone on your team's got to be on their toes and do the best they can. So I'm sure I can be demanding in that sense, but I think the successful people that I work with over the years, they all demand that from themselves as well, and are surely willing to kind of step up to that challenge.
All right, Fanny. So I have a question for you. What is the singular greatest thing you saw Henrik do on the golf course? Whether it was a shot, whether it was a comment he made after the shot, an interaction with a fan, an interaction with a fellow player. What's the one thing that sticks out that you remember to this day is, wow, I was lucky enough to kind of be here and experience that?
Well, I mean, there's so many good things about Henrik. That's okay. If I have to say, I mean, you've said a lot of examples there. One thing that I think is he's unbelievable with, he signs a lot of autographs. Okay, we're in a different scenario now with no fans, but Henrik, no matter how the day would have gone, if he shot a good round or a round that could have been better, he always signed a lot of autographs, especially for the kids. You know, he'd always stop for the kids. And I think things that he does is for golf and for juniors. And I mean, he's just an amazing person. And then golf-wise, he's hit so many good shots and done so many good things. that I've been involved with, where I had the I was fortunate enough to work with him, and also that I've seen him do after that and winning the Open. I mean, the way he did that, that stands out to me. Even if I wasn't there, I was with him watching it on TV, and I couldn't have been happier for him. So a lot of things stands out with Henrik. He is a fantastic person, not just a great player. He's a great person too.
Thank you, Fanny. That's very nice words to hear. I'd like to add on that. I think when we won the TPC, when we won the Players' Championship together in 2009, I took a lot of pride in, and you said that the final round was probably the second best round you've ever caddied or seen firsthand.
Yeah.
After Nick winning the 1996 Masters, right? When he beat Greg in that final round, you thought our final round 66 at Sawgrass in Onan was the second best round. And coming from someone with your experience and being with all the greats out on the course over the years, that was certainly something I took a lot of pride in. And up until the final round at the 2016 Open at Troon, the 09 final round at Sawgrass was my best final round to win a tournament by far. So that one still kind of sits as my second best round in my career. So that was a great week for us and a great win.
Yeah, that's true. It's bad of me not saying that, because that's, you're right. If it's your second best round, it's my second best round too, and that was unbelievable. And I remember on the last hole, remember we took two clubs less and we still got up over that second ridge. It went much further than what we thought.
Yeah, I hit five wood eight iron, I think, up 18 at Sawgrass. Now you're pretty pumped up.
Yeah, I don't even think. Adrenaline.
Yeah, I don't think even Jeff would get there with a 5-8 iron.
No, probably. Well, it depends what tees I played, because I would move up to a tee where I could do that.
Yeah, fair.
Plus, I hit a 5-wood pretty far. But Fanny, you know, going back through the fun moments, what is the one story about Henrik? Let's keep it to on the golf course to protect the innocent, that just makes you laugh and smile even to this day.
Well, I mean, he's done so many funny, you know, he's a funny guy. Everyone knows that. He's got a great sense of humor. But I think actually going back to Players again, I think it was kind of fun when Tiger, do you remember that, Henrik? When Tiger came out, we came to the range and Tiger had the what's it called?
The hard hat.
The hard hat on, yeah.
Well, now you're hanging him out there to dry again, because there's obviously more to that story than Tiger just showing
Please
up.
Please tell.
Tiger's not just going to show up on the range on a Sunday wearing a hard hat saying, "I'm ready for you, Henrik." It might have done something with me hitting a poor tee shot on the, I think it was the Friday on 18, and I hit it in the water off the tee, and walking up there, I kind of slammed my 5-wood or 3-wood on a sprinkler head, and the head actually came off and kind of came flying back towards the people that were walking behind me. And thankfully it didn't hit anyone really, but it was kind of nudging by, I think, one of the cameramans just like dodged a bullet, and then the next day Tiger shows up in a hard hat on the range, and we were drawn together because we ended up on the same score on Friday afternoon, and he said, "I'm ready for you." He looked funny in that one. I remember you cracked up badly when Tiger showed up in that one.
And to be fair with you, you didn't know that you were going to hit the club on the sprinkler head. You didn't mean to do that.
No. I was a bit surprised myself, but obviously it was my fault for slamming the club in the ground. But I didn't expect.
I think
club
I gave you the wrong club from the tee, wasn't it? So maybe it was my fault. The caddy should always take the blame.
No, it wasn't. I was convinced you were going to say Doral and the whole kind of underwear shot.
I'm going there next.
Okay,
I'm going there next.
Yeah. Here we go.
So Fanny, you have to take us back to Doral. And we've told the story from Henrik's point of view on the podcast before, but I want to hear the whole entire episode from your point of view.
I mean, well, obviously, we get to the where the ball is lying on this hole, and it's lying on the mud in the, then it was a water hazard. And of course, Henrik can see that he can play it. Well, I'm busy doing my yardages to see, you know, because there's a few things around there. So I'm away, we're a little bit away. So I'm doing my angles and doing the yardage and come back. And well, Henrik's going to hit it. We, you know, we already sort of did talked about that. So he took his, you know, took his shoes off, took his pants off, and then he took his shirt off. And I didn't really think that much of it at the time, because I was more worried about getting the numbers out and everything. But maybe he should have kept the shirt on for, you know, for the for what people thought afterwards. But no, it sure made for a fun picture.
Yeah, but you can tell on that sequence, you can tell Fanny is like straight in the yardage book. We have a sequence, and it's almost like she's so focused on her bit, she doesn't realize I'm standing there only in my boxer shorts with a club and a glove.
Yeah, that was my question, Fanny. How did you keep your focus? Because, I mean, there probably would have been a moment where you're looking like, what are you doing?
Well, I'm Swedish. And I just thought, well, you know, he might as well stand there in his swimming trunks. So I'm like, I honestly didn't think that much of it, because I was so thinking about where we were going to hit the next shot. And then when I see the picture, it's funny, because as Henrik's saying, he's standing there with his glove on and just in his jocks, and I'm standing there really looking at the yardage book and trying to work out where we're going to hit it.
Amazing. Fanny, I have one last question for you. As you know, on our podcast every week, we have what's become quickly everyone's favorite segment of the show, Ask the Iceman. So here is your chance. The Iceman is here. He cannot refuse to answer the question. So what do you have to ask the Iceman?
Well, I actually think the Iceman, it sounds a little bit like you should be in a Bond movie. So my question is, what's your favorite Bond moment? And who's your favorite Bond?
Well, unfortunately, my favorite Bond, he just passed away a couple of days here. Sean Connery, I'd say, hands down there. It's, he's my all-time favorite. Favorite Bond movie back in the day. I mean, technology has advanced so much compared to, I mean, you're looking at these old ones and they're riding in a car, and you can kind of tell that someone's moving the screen behind the car and they're bouncing up and down, and it's looking rather ridiculous, but kind of cute in a way. That's a tough one to just pull one up. I mean, I just loved Sean Connery's accent and, you know, the way he would say certain kind of phrases, and it was great to get to spend a bit of time with him down in the Bahamas a few years back. We played a little 9-hole scramble, and I with him and his son Stefan, and I think the best moment for me there was Sean was, you know, not playing well. He's played golf his whole life, more or less, and
he was a big golfer.
Yeah, very keen on his golf and followed golf on TV and so on. But he's sitting in his cart, and he hit a couple of bad tee shots, as we all do every now and again, and he just picked his ball up and he was cursing at it, like, you know, like with his voice. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, it's pretty cool, I'm out here playing golf with James Bond and he's cursing at the ball, and it was just like a cool moment, and now unfortunately he passed a few days back. So I reached out and sent our condolences to his family, and he will be missed and great actor, one of the all time greats, I think, on the movie screen. So he will surely be missed, but we can always go back and enjoy some of the old movies.
Absolutely. Yeah, the art and the work lives forever. Fanny, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it. And now, Henrik, it's time to see what others...
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Fanny. Great to see you again.
Yeah, great to see you. Good luck this week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Henrik, you've already been asked the Iceman by Fanny. That was a good question she asked you. And I loved your answer. I think that Sean Connery's... obviously the right choice, but some of the other Bonds have also been great. Let's see what other folks want to ask you. Here comes one from Chagman 1964. Henrik, I'm guessing you're tired of hearing about Bryson's initiatives, but maybe yes. He is a game changer like the Fosbury flop. My son is 13, and if you were 13 again, would the new Bryson strategy have made you change anything in your focus, or was length a priority before accuracy when you were 13?
It's kind of interesting that Fosbury flop there to try something new, right? When you have that surname, it could have been a flop.
It could have been a flop. And you could argue it was a flop because he actually flopped.
Yeah, a lot of flops here. I think as a kid, you want to try and hit it far. And I think it's certainly easier to try and straighten someone out that can hit it a far distance than to have someone that hits it pretty straight all of a sudden adding 30 yards. So it's probably not a bad idea as a kid to try and, you know, really give it a good dig and try and generate speed and distance. And then we can hopefully tidy it up as we go along. It'd be hard. I'm pretty sure you're going to have quite a few guys sitting back home there now. They might be 15, and they love golf. That's all they want to do, and they're gonna go, I'm gonna hit it as far as Bryson, and wherever we're gonna end up with this game and the distances we hit it and so forth, I guess that's yet to be seen. But I definitely, you know, I wouldn't spend all my time on that, because we touched on that earlier, that Bryson didn't win the US Open just because they hit it far. You got to do a lot of other things, right? Yeah, the putting, you got a strategy. You know, you got to keep on hitting greens. You got to hit good short shots. So distance is one part of it. And I definitely would focus on it to a degree, but I wouldn't give it all my focus, because you got to do the other things well too if you want to compete out here. So don't neglect it, but don't spend all your time trying to lash it far.
And I was thinking the 47 and a half or 48 inch driver, a little more room to kind of crack over the knee too, kind of an added bonus. Guess you haven't strategized about that.
Just don't go there.
Okay. All right. Next question from Craig Innes. If the tables were turned and you had to caddy for one of the caddies, who would you pick and why?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. We had the caddy awards we've had every year in Shanghai at the HSBC Champions Tournament, the WGC event, now more. And they always used to have one award to the caddy who thought it was a player. And you could see where and why they had that one. And that would obviously be given to a caddy who was pretty self-confident and thought that he would probably do a better job if he was playing rather than maybe his player and so on. But two guys kind of comes to mind. Kenny Arms, that caddies for Kevin Na. I think he rates himself pretty good. He's a good player. So it'd be kind of fun to see what Kenny's got in terms of his golf game. Steve Williams, I think, is another one that also, he's got a pretty strong opinion when his players maybe don't do as he thought. You can kind of sense it a little bit with Steve that he would get a little annoyed and is like, oh, that's a poor shot. I wouldn't have hit that myself. Then, bearing in mind that he caddied for Tiger for so many years, he's been used to seeing excellence from morning till evening, I guess. So yeah, I'm sure his standards are set very high. So I'd pick one of those guys.
Excellent choices. All right, our next one from Ashley Chinner. Saw you practicing a few years back with a club that had an extreme offset club head. What was it? And what was the feel you were looking for?
I'm sure that was just my 8-iron that I accidentally stepped on.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been after you hit the club, as we talked about with Fanny, on the sprinkler, there was extreme offset to the head.
I think we are referring to this training club. It was actually an 8-iron, I think, and a wedge. I can't remember the name of it, but it had a big bend on the shaft, and it was kind of made to recreate your kind of impact position. When you put yourself in the impact position, then you would really feel the kind of pressure on that bent shaft, and you could hit shots with it. And because it had a bent shaft, it would be horrendous when you kind of got it out of plane and you got it out of position. It felt awful. So it certainly gave you a direct feedback on somewhat where you wanted to be and needed to be to be able to hit good shots. So yeah, maybe I'll be back home in the garage here looking for that club again.
I like it. All right. Last one. And I feel like this is kind of, you know, sometimes we get these questions. I kind of think they're like inside jobs where someone is trying to get at you. But I, of course, am going to go along with it. So this is from A. Killorn 19. Can you explain how a hockey player outdrove you by 20 yards?
Yeah. This is obviously from my buddy Alex Killorn, the place, the Stanley Cup champion from Tampa Bay Lightning.
Number 19.
I think he's got 17 on his back, don't he?
Oh, I'd have to look. I thought he wore 19.
Yeah, but I think he's actually got 17, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe he's trying to confuse me with this.
I think so. Yeah, we played at Nona with Victor Hedman, another fellow Swede and, the best defenseman in the league, basically. And... yeah, Alex got one on, I think it was on number 9. He even had it on video. So he hits this sneaky little old screaming drive down the left-hand side. And I hit this high flary cut out to the right. And I guess if you measure it perfectly, he was probably a few good yards past me. So, I'm here to make my buddies feel good. And yeah, he just outdrove me.
But he says by 20 yards.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it might have been 19. It might be 19 and a half. But, I'm here to make my buddies feel good. But it won't happen again, I promise you. I'm not going to do the same mistake twice.
Excellent. Well, now I'm mad at Alex because I would love to be able to have outdriven you, and now I'll never get the chance. All right. I know we like to joke around a lot, but Fanny said it best, all the wonderful things that you do. And I think this next topic we're going to talk a little bit about is probably at the top of the list for me. Let's talk a little bit about Go For It, Hank. First, let's tell people who aren't familiar with it what you've done, because this is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a kid's book together with Emma. Emma, she came to me, I think, in 2017, and asked if I was up for the idea of writing a children's book about golf and trying to inspire kids and also have the proceeds go to some charitable causes. So of course we jumped on that, and we were participating in my first ever book. It's called Go For It, Hank, in English. Henke Golfmus in Swedish. So
you just ruined it. I was going to drop that on you because I had learned how to say it in Swedish.
Oh yeah, sorry. I still want to hear you try and pronounce it. So
Henke Golfmus. Henke Golfmus.
Yeah, Henke Golfmus.
I've been practicing for the last 2 weeks on this.
Yeah, well done. It was not all in vain. So it's basically takes you on a little 9-hole journey. With Hank and his buddies. It's Emma, funnily enough. My wife is called Emma, so she got to be in there. And Mike, who's a good friend from my years in Dubai, that passed away the same week that I won the Open. So I kind of dedicated his or the open win to his memory there, because he passed away that week. And we're all playing a round of golf, and there's some little lessons to learn along the way on strategy and patience. And given how I played lately, maybe I need to go back home tonight and pick up the book and read it and see if we can have a better week here in Houston this time around.
Yeah, and even with the awesome charitable money that's going to be raised with the book, we thought we wanted to try to get our loyal listeners here a little more incentive to go to www.goforithank.com. If you buy the book, we're going to give away a Callaway prize bundle, Henrik, on our very next podcast. And then we're going to encourage more people to buy the book, and we'll probably give away another prize bundle in the podcast after that. So let's everyone go to goforithank.com and let's buy this book. It's available in English and Swedish. And what I was thinking, Henrik, is I'm going to buy one for myself in Swedish so I can further learn how to say more than Henke Golfdemus.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll even sign it for you.
Oh, even better, even better. There are 9 advices in the book. You talked about a couple of them, but there's one in particular I want to get your take on. Advice number 6, do the happy dance.
Happy dance. When we're done with this podcast, I'm going to go out there and do the happy dance and start hitting balls with Pete on the range.
Okay, excellent. Well, go to www.goforithank.com. And let's buy this book and let's raise a lot of money. And look, you entered for the chance to win a prize pack. All right, Henrik. Since the start of our podcast, I've done This Week in Obscure Henrik Stenson History. And I've normally just been making them up. I don't know if you figured that out by now. But actually, for the first time ever, I actually have something that is notable that happened 20 years ago this week. And we're about to play a video that I'm going to get you to comment on, because something magical happened 20 years ago in Cuba. Look at this guy.
Look at that guy.
Look at that hat.
Yeah.
The pleats in the pants. Samuel L. Jackson called and said he'd like his Kangol hat back. And Henrik Stenson, the champion of the second Cuban Challenge Tour finale, which secured your European Tour card. That wasn't really a knee knocker, that little putt and a half. I would have liked to have seen a better highlight, but 18 under, closing
'60s. I think I won by 5. So I had more than a few from 2 feet on the last. But the funny story there was that my golf clubs, we all traveled through Paris, and there was a snowstorm in Paris at the time. A lot of our clubs got missing. So I actually had to play a practice round with this horrible set that they had in the back corner of the pro shop that was, unplayable, more or less. And I even thought about not teeing it up if my clubs didn't arrive. And an hour and 5 minutes, I think, before my tee time, I got a message that the club had arrived and my clubs had arrived. And I just ran out there and I think I kissed them, every one of them on the range. And I went out and won the week by 5 shots. So that was certainly a shift in momentum on that Thursday morning. And won the final, got on tour, won my first European Tour event 5-6 months later in England.
Right, and 5 or 6 months from now, when it's This Week in Obscure Henrik Stenson History, we will revisit that as well. Is there any chance you could pull that hat back out and maybe Thursday for the 20th anniversary pull that hat on?
I don't have one of those anymore, but maybe we should. I'll think of something.
All right. A couple more things, Henrik, and then we'll let you get onto the range because, as you know, you won't spend more than an hour with me, so we'll make sure we hit our time. Architecturally, what makes Augusta so great? Is there one thing, or is it just the totality of everything about it?
Well, the feel and the history, and it's the one major we're coming back to every year and all that. That makes it special. But I think what I really like is, no matter how hard a pin position can be and how difficult that golf course can be and play, I think you always have a chance to hit the shot. So you might stand there with a 7-iron, you don't have a big area to hit, but if you actually land the ball in the perfect position, you can get it close and you can get rewarded. And I have to say, there's a lot of other major championships and courses that we play where the setup or the conditions are that there's actually not a possibility to get the ball close to the hole. You take one for as an example, we're playing the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, and I think it's the fifth hole, a par three, probably 245 yards with a firm green, and the pin sits 4 yards over the bunker, and you're standing with a 4-iron or 3-iron and trying to, a perfect shot is going to end up 40 feet in the back of the green, and you're trying to putt it down there. And yeah, we can argue that it's a place for that too, but that's what I really like with Augusta, that the shot is pretty much always there if you're willing to try and pull it off, or if you pull it off. If it doesn't, it might not be the sensible and smart thing to do, but it's there, and have at it. If you think you're good enough or you're feeling confident enough and you play it, you're going to get rewarded. So
that's a great answer, because that's I think that's that sums up the Masters, right? I mean, think about all the indelible memories we have at Augusta. It's people trying to pull off the shot that seemed impossible and then succeeding. Because I think what you just let the viewers in on, the listeners in on, is that there actually is, even if it's, you have to execute perfectly, but if you do execute perfectly, you're rewarded for that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and there's not a, you learn over time that you might as well go for it. Just like the book, go for it. And
yeah,
there's not a place to dump it to 15, 20 feet and have a decent look for birdie. And if it doesn't come off, you make your par, because that ball's going to roll down and be 50, 60 feet away over a ridge or up a slope or something, and it's going to be a very hard chance to make your par. So you might as well actually play more aggressive than most weeks. And if it's your week, you're going to be up there, have a good tournament, to have a chance to win. And if it's not, at least with the way I look at it, I might as well go home or to finish 50th. It doesn't really matter too much to me. I'd rather... it's kind of go big or go home in that sense at this point. So, yeah, well, if we can bring enough game, we're going to play a bit aggressive.
Plus, if you get an eagle, you get some awesome crystal. They don't give you a crystal for making a par.
No, that's right. I'd have a lot of crystals if I got crystals for par.
Well, especially if they gave them for pars in Memphis. All right. Last two things, because we're going to skip the tour story because I feel like we covered that with Fanny. But in the mental game, what's the difference mentally in a major versus in a regular tour event?
Well, everything's just going to be put on its test a little bit more. You know, your patience got to be high. You're going to make mistakes. The golf course is normally a lot harder, so it's going to make you make more mistakes. And it's really an endurance test. How many times can you take it on the chin and keep on going? And the guys who do well, they manage to do that on the mental side quite a bit better than a lot of other players. So I'm not sure where I'm at with my patience at the moment. It's been kind of running a little low here at times, but we'll try and take this last week here to do the happy dance and kind of gear up on patience. How does that sound?
Right. I mean, the first part of actually having more patience is committing to have more patience. So you're already set. You're already one step of the way there.
Yeah.
All right. The final word, Henrik, the segment where I ask you to make one prediction. I make one prediction and we never, ever revisit it unless it comes true. And then we tell everybody about it. So do you have any predictions for me, either for Houston or for the Masters?
Well, I think I'm as curious as everybody in the world of golf to see how Bryson is going to fare around Augusta. I said it before, when we revisited the US Open, that I thought his strategy and his length would be a bigger asset at Augusta than necessarily at the US Open, and he won the US Open. So I think it'd be interesting to see what he brings and how the week is going to be played out. It's exciting times for the golf fans and the Masters is always a special week. So I'm excited as well to see how that goes.
See, my thought is they were going to put him in the last group out on Thursday. And then right before his group comes in, they are just going to water the fairway to the point where every one of those 400 yard drives just plugs. But I don't want to make that as a prediction. My prediction is we're going to see a first-time Masters winner win. That I think enough things are going to be different this year where it's not going to be the normal April. It's not going to be the normal champions dinner. It's not going to be the normal everything. So the champions are going to have to be a little off their game. And I think we're going to see a first time Masters winner.
I got one more prediction as well. I think I'm going to be the best Swede at the 2020 Masters.
Would you like to clarify that statement for anyone who doesn't have a field list in front of them?
No, I just have a good feeling about it.
Okay. Well, maybe Alex Noren wins this week and qualifies, and then you'll have a little bit of a battle. But otherwise, I think that is one of the safest bets we can have. All right, Henrik, thank you so much for spending almost an hour. Thanks to Fanny Sunesson for spending some time. And everybody, go to www.goforthank.com, buy the book, support a great cause, learn these nine lessons. Like I said, I'm going to buy one in English and in Swedish, the way I can kind of have my own little translation guide going. And you'll win a chance to enter for a chance to win a great Callaway prize pack. We'll tell you about it in 2 weeks.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Great to see Fanny again. And even though it's hard to say, great to see you again, Jeff.